Krejci, backhand flip to Krug. Out of the zone to Seth Griffith, right wing. Lobs it offensive end, wide of the net. Bruins peel off, make the change on the fly. And I'm going to change on the fly as well. Jack Edwards ready to take over. Jack Edwards ready to take over now as well. Jack, brought to you by Shaw's Supermarkets, joins us on the AT&T hotline. And Jack, nice to see you again. How are you?
You know, Dale, I think that unless people have called play-by-play, they can have no appreciation for how difficult it is to call play-by-play from the end zone of an NHL arena. But that was damn good.
It wasn't as impressive as you think, because I was making stuff up. I mean, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah, you weren't paying attention. You had no idea what you're talking about. Nice segue,
radio
though.
Radio day's fun. Yeah, radio's great because, you know, if it doesn't really happen that way in your mouth, then it never really happened, period.
Exactly.
You see, that segue was a real professional one. And I'm going to
turn play was on, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm going to turn things over to Jack Edwards. Wow.
I had to wait for a dump into the offensive zone to do it right, though, Jack.
Perfectly clean change.
And then get the hell out of the way. Get over the boards. I said to Michael earlier, I thought that was a pretty impressive win, their most impressive victory of the season by far.
No doubt. And San Jose is a good team, and even though the Sharks are everybody's favorite punching bag to ridicule them come playoff time because they've had so many terrific regular seasons followed by such great disappointment in the playoffs, I still think San Jose's got something in them. I still think they're going to make a run. Doug Wilson's not going to stand still. He's going to improve that team. They're going to be there at the end, and it would be great if the Bruins were too. That game had such a different tempo to it than the Montreal game because the Montreal game felt like a relay race. It was just up and down the ice, and this game felt more like two heavyweights standing in the middle of the ring just trading big body blows and then going combination to the head. It was really a really fun game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely was fun to watch. I want to ask you more about the game in a second. I just want I want you to give me some education here. You know, I steal from you and Dale liberally and unapologetically. I want to ask you about just the precedent. I know what's happened before of stripping a C from a player or stripping an A from a player and how that plays in the room. And that's what happened to Joe Thornton. He's not the first guy that's happened to in the NHL. How do teams usually recover from that? It seems like a very sensitive thing to do.
Well, it depends on the rest of the leadership group. And to be totally honest with you, I don't know the character in that San Jose room anywhere well enough to make a judgment on it. They stripped it from Patrick Marleau when they gave it to Thornton. So, you know, this isn't unknown territory for them. I'm not really sure how important it is to have a single captain in the NHL because it is such a shared leadership kind of sport. And, you know, nobody plays the whole game except the goalie. And except for Roberto Luongo in Vancouver, there hasn't been a goalie who's been the captain of a team in memory. You know, it's been a long, long time. And so... I don't really know if it has that big an effect on the chemistry, but it definitely is a symptom of something, and it's a symptom that San Jose is struggling for leadership and that they hope that some personality is going to emerge. Some people are thinking that it's Logan Couture. I'm not sure he's ready to do that, but, you know, maybe he is. Maybe he is. If he has a sensational season, maybe everybody gets in line behind him. Really, it's what they do on the ice and the way they behave. And if you looked at Joe Thornton last night, Thornton made two excellent defensive plays last night, and that's something he was not well known for here in Boston. So he's changed. He's changed for sure.
Now, there are some Bruins who early in the season didn't look like themselves. I'd say Dennis Seidenberg was in that category. Brad Marchand was in that category. And also Milan Lucic, of those three guys who have started to break out and had some good performances last night, which one are you least worried about going forward of the three guys I mentioned?
Seidenberg. Simply because it's steady progress with him, and you can see him getting better each game. And last night definitely was his best game of the season. Lucic and Marchand are kind of mercurial players. They get very hot, and then they cool off. And that is more typical of forwards than defensemen, so maybe we're comparing apples to oranges a little bit. when Marchand is on his game, he's just a little bit shy of the razor's edge of doing something really dumb on the ice, because he has to be on that edge and really needling his opponents in order to get the best out of himself. At times, it wears a little thin. Going after PK Subban in Montreal the way he did, some people could see that as a dirty play. It sure looked borderline to it, because Marchand was putting the stick in a place where you usually shouldn't. Now, on the other hand, PK Subban could have settled that for good if he tried to beat the tar out of Marchand in front of 21,000 of his most passionate followers. I'm sure they would have enjoyed him taking on Marchand for doing that, but Subban chose not to do that. So I guess I have a little concern about Marchand's consistency. Lucic has been streaky throughout his career, but he, in most big game situations, has been unbelievable. The question about Lucic is getting him to reach that level of high, consistent achievement during the regular season. So I guess I'm least concerned about Seidenberg, because he's making steady progress, at least it appears to be.
On the day Peter Chiarelli traded Johnny Boychuk to the New York Islanders, he freely admitted that the team was not as good then as they were before he made the trade. They couldn't be. You took a top four defenseman off the team. You added draft picks that don't help you at all. He was being honest about it. He also said it was the first of several moves that he's going to make. What's your timetable, do you think, on the next move? Because that's something Michael and I were talking about. When do you think they have to make the next move, whatever it is?
What he wants to say is something that Michael is obsessed with and won't let go, so help.
Well, it's a good obsession, because this team needs to make a move. And even if Seth Griffith lights it up for 2 weeks or a month or so, you still think they have to make a move, because people are going to get hurt. You need additional depth. And right now, if they would have a top six forward go down, as was the case with David Krejci at the beginning of the year, this is a very incomplete team. They need some depth where they don't have it. To me, it's around December 1st. You want a guy to have enough time really to gel, to go through a cold spell, and then to get it back and to peak for the playoffs. You don't want to get anywhere near the deadline, because as soon as you get past January 1st, prices skyrocket, and you're going to overpay ridiculously for the kind of talent the Bruins need. And the kind of talent the Bruins need is a difference-making top six forward that every time he swings his legs over the boards, the other team goes, uh-oh. And that's what you had with Iginla, because even when he wasn't scoring, he was breaking rocks. The guy had an incredible work ethic here in Boston, and I'm sure he's going to in Colorado for the rest of his career. He's, you don't replace a guy like that easily, but that's what they need to do. They need to find more than a patch. They need to find a major pillar of the team and stick it in there.
We're starting to hear names like Jordan Eberle, Chris Stewart. What do those names do for you?
Chris Stewart is a potential coach killer. He's got incredible upside, yet he's the best player on the ice once every eight games, and that would drive people nuts around Boston, because you would see what he could be, but he has a long record now in the NHL of not getting there. And he's played for some pretty good organizations, and they've moved him. And if they have moved him, it's because they haven't figured out how to get the most out of him. This was the same situation with Benoit Pouliot. And he ended up having one hot playoff, and he got a four-year, $20 million contract out of Edmonton. Good for him. You know, I'm happy that he can make a great living for what right now is a terrible team. But there are guys that you see the chance of greatness, and then the longer you watch them, the more you realize they're not going to get there. And for me, I'm afraid that that's where Stewart is. Eberle, on the other hand, I would love to see him in black and gold. He has all the elements that the Bruins could look for and depend on. He's got speed, he's got creativity, he's got daring, he's a game changer, and he would be playing for so much better of a team in Boston than he's playing for in Edmonton, that one would think that he would say to himself, okay, I've had my mulligan, this is what I live for, and I'm going to make the most of this opportunity and really contribute to this team. So, yeah, I'm way more the Eberle type than the Stewart type.
Finally, before we let you go, we got to do some inside radio stuff here. For people who weren't watching last night, Jack and Brick and our boss Sean McGrail were down on the ice to drop the first puck for Nesson 30 night at the Boston Bruins. The plan was Jack and Brick were then going to hustle down the hall. There's an elevator behind the media dining room. The elevator would be held and waiting for them. They were then going to zip up to the ninth floor where the press box is and where the broadcast booth is and theoretically be ready to go at the beginning of the game. The NHL wouldn't hold the faceoff as we had hoped that they would, which is why you heard my voice at all. You weren't supposed to. What was the sprint like for you and Brick?
I'll say this. You know, having gone through a lot less wear and tear in my life than Brick has, I beat him to the elevator by probably 10 or 15 seconds, but I haven't seen him move that fast since he was playing in the NHL. He was going way faster than those joints should move.
And then when you got to the ninth floor, where the media elevator, or where the elevator is that you came up, you had to run all around half of the top ring of the building to get to the broadcast booth.
Yeah, that was a sprint. That was a full-on sprint, but it was great. It was kind of fun. It was pretty neat to be down there on the ice, and Chara was so serious because he totally was in game mode, and Joe Thornton was just being Joe, joking around, having fun, saying hi, being a nice guy. It was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Thanks for filling in, because you were awesome, especially calling it from the end zone.
Thank you. As we used to say when Joe played here, there has never been a bad day on Planet Joe.
It's absolutely correct. And I still think he has it in him. I still think that before he hangs it up, he's going to hold that cup over his head.
He's got 2 years left after this one at $6.75 million per. Would you go for him if you could?
I'll tell you what, I would. I absolutely would if I could find a way to fit him, because he is one of the great passers of his age, and he has shown that he has the buy-in, and he'll play in the back half of the ice. I don't think you could get him out of San Jose this year, though, man. What would you have to give up to get Joe? Oh, a lot more than Marco Sturm, Primo,
right,
and Brad Stewart, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that was such a good package too, wasn't it? Jack, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
It's all good. Thanks, Dale.
Jack Edwards, brought to you by Shaw Supermarkets. I would take a little more.
Yeah, Marco Sturm, Brad Stewart, and?
Keith Primo.
Wayne.
The wrong Primo. Wayne Primo.
It was,
yeah,
Wayne. Keith would have been the right one.
Yeah, no, they got
Wayne
the wrong,
was the wrong
Primo.
One.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't quite work.
Wow.
617-779-7937. Bob Ryan will join us at the top of the hour. His brand new book out is called Scribe, My Life in Sports. We're just going to wind him up and let him go and let him tell a bunch of stories. And he's got a bunch in this book that are great. The Larry Bird chapter just infatuated me. We'll talk to Bob about all this stuff. You've got chapters that you liked more than others. I've got chapters that I liked more than others. The book itself is incredible. We'll talk to Bob at the top of the hour. But we'll get back to the calls with you guys as well. 617-779-7937. And oh, by the way, a very special Bob Ryan-themed 4 at 4.
This is going to be good.
To kick off our hour with Bob is coming up at the top of the hour.
Oh, he loved Larry Bird.